Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, where we highlight people and organizations who are doing really great things and making a big impact in our community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. You know, I've had some really interesting guests and talked about so many different topics on our show over the last number of years, and I've learned so much from the things that we've discussed. Some happy and positive, some sad and perhaps not so positive. But what I will tell you is that even if the content or the challenge or the adversity was a bit tough to talk about and maybe not so positive, it always had a silver lining. We chose to focus and highlight on the great things that these people have done and continue to do. I've been impacted and inspired in so many ways by the stories that my guests have shared, and hopefully it'll do the same for you. I'm confident that our goal of informing, inspiring, and impacting you will be accomplished with our wonderful guests that are featured today, just like it has with all the past guests on the show. And hopefully what they have to share will prompt and motivate you to want to give back or pay it forward and make a difference in some way for others. My first guest today is Michelle Altman from Cornerstone of Grace, whose mission is to offer a safe environment for women and their children, equipping them to face life's challenges by building healthy relationships and a solid foundation for growth and stability for the future. Welcome to the show today, Michelle.
Thank you for having me, Jill.
You are certainly welcome. I watched your video on your website and was very much impacted and inspired. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to start Cornerstone of Grace?
Sure. I will say that I have always had a passion for helping people, and I attest that to my mom and God. At an early age, my mom instilled in me to love people. Unfortunately, she died when I was 9 years old, and I didn't know how much those words would impact me later. And God instilled in me to love his people. My mom instilled in me to love God, and God instilled in me to love his people. I can just talk about a quick story. When I was 9 years old, there was a woman that was next to the railroad tracks as I was taking a walk, and I felt led to help her. And so, needless to say, I advocated for her. I went and made her sandwiches and packed bags for lunch and anything that I thought she would like. And then I gave it back to her. And I sat and ate a sandwich with her, and I asked her, what did she need? And she said, baby, I'm hungry, and I don't have a place to lay my head. And so I just ran home again, and I just looked in a telephone book, found a place for her to go, and called the police, and they came and got her, transported her where she needed to go. And 3 months later, I found out that she was in the program, she was working the program, and that she would never be homeless again. And so, you know, I just always say that, you know, for as long as I could remember, loving people, helping people has been part of my life.
That's wonderful. And you actually told your story in your book, Roots of My Identity. I am who you say I am. So it's wonderful. Maybe people can check that out on your website or get the book.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful story. I encourage everybody to go on the website and hear it in more detail. Michelle just kind of gave a little few snippets about it. But so tell us more then about Cornerstone of Grace. You know, what are some of the programs that you offer?
Some of the programs that we offer are our families can come and stay a minimum of 3 months. They are there up to a year. While they are with us, they are required to take parenting classes, counseling. We do the David Ramsey budget course with them. We partner them with mentors that we ask to follow them for the rest of their lives. We help them find jobs, and we also tutor our kiddos for schooling, and we do that Monday through Friday with them.
Wonderful. Well, what makes your programs different from others that are out there then?
I think of what I said about the longevity of our program. We have a couple of different tiers. So in that first tier, like I said, they can stay with us for up to a year. And then our tier two is when we help them find housing. And that is an additional year. And yeah, so it's the building those healthy relationships over time.
Okay. And you, when you talk about your place, you have a physical space.
Absolutely. Yes, we have two houses that sit right next to one another where we are able to serve. In each house, we are able to serve three women and up to 10 children in each house.
Okay. So two homes, different sized families in
yes.
each one. And you're providing not only what they need today, but in the future.
Correct.
And you walk alongside them to offer yes. support in many, many ways.
Yes. It's about continuing to build it. Relationship with them.
Yeah, so important. I mean, people, yeah, there's a lot of people that need help right now, but to have that relationship that extends and to have somebody advocate for you and just be there for you throughout your lifetime, ideally, nothing better than that, right?
Yes.
So tell us a story. I love stories of impact because it really helps our audience understand what you do, and I'm sure you have many of them. Can you give us an idea of how Cornerstone of Grace has made a difference in the life of either one of your participants or maybe one of your kiddos or both?
Okay. So I could just talk about one of the ladies that came in. When she came in, she had no hope. She didn't know God, and she always envisioned of starting her own business. But she said, you know, she didn't think it was attainable. Coming into the program and working the program, it got to the point of that, you know, I love when I can see the light come on in their eyes when they know who they are and whose they are in Christ Jesus. And so that happened. But also, we walked alongside of her, asked her what did she want for this, her business. She wanted a cleaning service. And so we helped her just plan out the business plan and walked alongside of her to get the LLC started. And now she's a graduate of the program, and now she has her own cleaning organization, and she has her own clients, and she's thriving.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. What about the kiddos?
So for the
How
kids.
How do you pick one?
Yes.
Right? I'm sure
it's
so
hard.
Many.
Yes, it's definitely hard to just pick just one. But the one that I will talk about is, so when this kiddo came in, she, because we tutor our children, you know, there was opportunities for her to read. And she always refused to read. And so we needed to find out why. And she wasn't very good at reading. And so we found out that she was in the bottom 10 percentile of reading in her in the school. And so we just continued to work with her, encourage her. And by the time the end of the school year, she was in the 80 percentile.
Wow.
And we could not stop her from reading after, you know, she just the encouragement and just finding out that she could do it. But it's just that support of those tutors that walk alongside and encourage them.
And we all know that leaders are readers. And so you get them at a young age
yes.
to get them to love reading. That's awesome. Well, maybe Michelle's story has resonated with you. Maybe you too have the desire to either start a nonprofit or work with one. But maybe you're asking, where do I start? Well, let's hear more about Michelle's journey after commercial break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking with Michelle Altman, founder and executive director of Cornerstone of Grace. So as I said before the break, perhaps someone listening is interested in starting a nonprofit or maybe helping someone start one. And there are some things to consider first, like where does the funding come from? That's an important one, right? Mm-hmm. Michelle, is your nonprofit government funded?
No, we're not.
Oh, wow. Okay, so where do you get your funding? Where did you start?
So we started with the private donations. That has been huge for us. And we also write some grants to some foundations, and they help us as well. We go out and we do presentations at churches, and so they maybe will sponsor us a couple of times a year. And pretty much that's where we get our funding from.
So we have, I recently became aware of a program out there called Charity EZ, which is made available free to nonprofits, and it's a way to connect with donors. And so you're saying that it was so important for you to get out there, make it known who you were, who you are, and what you needed, right?
Yes.
And that's a great way to do that.
Charity EZ, I cannot speak enough about it.
Okay.
If it was not for Charity EZ, oh my goodness.
Okay, and the Mars Family Foundation.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. They've been on the show. Yep, and they've been featured on some of our nonprofit seminars that we have. So, but what would you say, because everybody has obstacles in their journey, it's not worry-free or adversity-free, I would say, yes. When you start your nonprofit, what would you say are some of your or were some of your biggest obstacles, and what did you do?
Okay, so I think I would talk about, because a lot of the ladies that come into the program have multiple evictions and multiple felonies. And so employment and housing has been two of the biggest obstacles for us. And so thankfully, just going out in the community and just building relationships and asking people to be part of giving these ladies and these families second chances has been huge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I imagine that's part of, you know, one of the factors that contributed to your ability to support families, right?
Yes, absolutely. The partnerships. I can't speak enough about collaboration with other organizations, because we just need different, you know, as it says, it takes many hands. It takes a lot of hands to do a job.
Right.
And so with collaborating with other organizations, we're able to do our job effectively and efficiently. I just can't say enough about the partnerships that we have. You know, there's no way that I could talk about the multiple partnerships that we have and just really name each one. But one that I would like to highlight is just the job piece of it. So due to the fact that our ladies have multiple felonies, I went into an organization, actually it was Piggly Wiggly in Watertown, and just asked Brian, would he be willing to just hire our women?
Give him a chance,
Give
right?
him a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, absolutely. And he
Yay, Brian.
He continues to just hire our women. And not only hire them, he actually really cares. He like fosters them, make sure that they have transportation to work. He does so much, and he also is now providing for all of our families that come in from now to the future, provides birthday cakes for the moms and the children to celebrate them.
Oh, wonderful.
And so it's just a wonderful partnership.
Yeah. We say all the time that not one nonprofit can do it all. And it's so important for us to have those partnerships, to collaborate with others in the community, whether they have the same goal or focus as you or not. You know, it's probably good to have all kinds of different relationships out there, because everybody has their thing that they do well. And so capitalize on that. Show people what you do well. Help others in the area where you do well, and ask for help in areas where you may be challenged or need some help. So, yeah, that collaborative process is so helpful. You got a lot of really great things going on over there. And again, we don't have enough time to go into everything. And I encourage people to visit the website to get more information. But tell us a little bit about plans for the future for Cornerstone of Grace.
Well, I would talk about we are now in a quiet phase of a capital campaign. So we want to continue to build those strong relationships through our programming for our families. And we also, we would love to purchase our homes that we, two homes that we currently rent. And that's some of the things that are going in the future.
Okay. Well, you know, we talk about the importance of partnerships and it's also so important for individuals to support you. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe something really resonates with a listener by your personal story, or maybe they were in that situation and they want to help, or maybe they just have a heart to help in some way. How can individuals and or corporations, because, you know, a lot of corporations have goals out there for philanthropy, including ours, you know, where you want to give back in some way. How can people partner with you?
Well, I would say first and foremost, the most important thing that anyone could do for us is to pray for us. Without that, we just can do
it's
nothing.
Free and it's yeah. The easiest thing to do, right?
Yes.
Right.
And we also have volunteer opportunities, multiple volunteer opportunities. And we need mentors to continue to follow our families. And we also, of course, need that financial support.
Okay, so if someone is out there looking to bless Cornerstone of Grace financially or grace them with your presence, your talents, whatever it is, reach out. Michelle, what's the best way for people to contact you?
There's a couple of ways. So we have our website, which is cornerstoneofgrace.org. And we also have our email, which is cornerstoneofgrace3@gmail.com. And the telephone number, which is 920-285-8378.
One more time.
920-285-8378.
Wonderful. And is it as easy as just Googling Cornerstone of Grace? Will you come up?
Absolutely.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so if you're driving and you can't write down any of that information Michelle just shared, just Google Cornerstone of Grace out in Watertown and you'll get to their site. And again, I encourage you to go visit the website and listen to Michelle's video where she tells her story. Also, check out her book, Roots of My Identity, I Am Who You Say I Am, available on Amazon. So thank you, Michelle Altman, founder and executive director of Cornerstone of Grace. Thank you for sharing your story and thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Jill.
You are certainly welcome. Our next guest works with Cornerstone of Grace in different capacities and is also focused on addressing critical needs in our community to build strong families. Stay tuned to learn more after a short commercial break.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today works with Cornerstone of Grace in a number of different ways in terms of addressing critical needs in the community and helping to build strong families. Welcome to the show today, Nathan Peters, CFO of the Greater Watertown Health Foundation. The foundation is a catalyst for positive, lasting improvement in the area of health and well-being across the region. They want to challenge the boundaries of what's possible and inspire people to think big. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I really love how your website describes you as a catalyst for positive, lasting improvement and how you inspire people to think big. That's wonderful. Now, who wouldn't want to embrace that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about the Greater Watertown Health Foundation and its mission.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, pleasure to be here. It's not every day they let the finance department out of the office, you know, and so I feel like it's a win for the math nerds out there. You know, we're a health conversion foundation. We were established in 2016, and our foundations are a health conversion foundation is established when a nonprofit hospital system sells to a for-profit hospital system, and it creates an endowment, right? And so when you mentioned, like, we think big, or we try to think big, our board tells us to address the root cause barriers of health that leads to promoting strong families, community well-being. But when we say that, when I first came out, I didn't come from the nonprofit sector. I had no idea what the root cause barriers to health were, or the social determinants of health and all these things. And so to really simply put it, like, when people's needs aren't being met, they can't thrive. Mm. If they need housing, if they need childcare, they need dental work, all these items are things that lead to people's success. And so our board chooses to go upstream. They're trying to think, what are the transformative systems we need to focus on in order to lead transformative change in these areas where people's needs are met? But sometimes that's policy advocacy. Sometimes that's doing grants. Sometimes that's doing impact investings. And so what we say we do, our job, because we invest in about 40 to 50 different organizations per year. We're backbone support for them, and we call them our change makers. They're the people who are boots on the ground doing the actual work, just like Cornerstone and Grace. But our job is to equip the change makers, to provide them the tools that they're going to need to tackle some of these really hard, complex problems that we go after. And some of those things are housing, and some of those things are childcare. And one of the new frontiers is mental health for us.
Yeah. So basically you're transforming lives and being a part of that process. Is that why you chose to use your talents at the foundation?
Yeah, it was. I grew up about 8 miles away from the foundation. Whenever my brother and I got hurt, that was the hospital that we went to. But when I started learning about the foundation, you know, I grew up in a small town. It was this service area that I grew up in. And I grew up with my mom was a kindergarten teacher. My dad worked in a manufacturing organization. Yeah, we were those lower middle income people. And, you know, when you even talk to them today and I talk about what we're doing, and they look at me and they said, there's no way we would have made it in today's life. It's too expensive. Mm. You sit there and you think, how could we do these things a little bit different? What needs to change? And do we have the voice in order to change that? So that was the precipice of, why did I make the change out of commercial banking, which I love doing, over into something where I can actually affect people's day-to-day lives? And you think, if we do this right and we write the template correctly, you're not just touching 100 people's lives or 1,000, but you do some of these things right, you might hit 1,000,000.
Yeah, and I think that's the overarching theme for why people get involved in the sector, right? Mm-hmm. They want to really be a part of that process of transforming lives and making things better for people. Share with us some of the foundation's accomplishments since you joined.
Sure. So when I joined, I actually got a phone call from one of their board members, and they basically told me, hey, you're coming and meeting Tina on Tuesday. And I said, oh, great. Okay. Who's Tina? And so they were talking to me about how they're planning on getting into impact vesting and using their balance sheet to grow more. And so that's what ended up bringing me really to the foundation. And my first day on the job, the board had a board meeting about a couple of months ago, and they were going to purchase this building. They were looking for a new home, right? And we're only a 10-person organization, so we don't need a lot. Well, this building was 55,000 square feet, and it's the only Class A office building in between probably Madison and Milwaukee at the time. And the story basically goes is there was headquarters here for Bethesda Lutheran Communities. They changed. After COVID happened, only 35 of them need to come back. And so they were like, we're going to put this on the market. Let's see what happens. Well, after about 15 minutes after the board decided, hey, let's buy this thing and figure it out, they came back and told Tina to buy the 100 acres that surround it as well, and let's tackle housing at the same time.
Wow, okay. Big goal.
Yeah, so day one, I had to go and try to negotiate the purchase of a 55,000-square-foot building, buy all the land, and then figure out what to do with it all.
Welcome to our company. Welcome to the foundation. We got some plans for you.
So that was really fun. We knew that we wanted to make childcare part of this building. We're in an absolute childcare desert. just like much of the state of Wisconsin, but we had 1,500 children in the city of Watertown that were 0 to 5. And national averages says 65% of those kids would use childcare if it was available to them. So that's like 1,100 children. We had 437 spots available in the entire city. That's all that was available. So we're like, okay, let's do this. So we took one floor and we worked with the YMCA and we worked with CESA too. And what we did was we created 120 spots for childcare, infant to six, and then also the 3K, 4K pro for CESA too. So now we have 220 kids that get served at the building every single day. We planned, we master planned a full YMCA expansion, which is in place right now. We're actually constructing a 77,000 square foot building on the side of this building. So we put in a 24-hour fitness center down in the basement. And then upstairs, we still needed a place to put our office, and it was way bigger than we needed. So we created a co-offering center. And so we now have about 7 or 8 organizations all working under the same roof, both nonprofit and for-profit. And we get a chance to rub elbows with probably about 60 different people a day now, which is super fun.
That's great. Well, gosh, with so many areas that you could invest in, how do you decide what to focus on?
Well, we tie everything back to third grade reading. When you talk about community well-being, think about this. You know, the key factors: health, economic stability, crime rates, education. The one thing that links all those together is whether or not someone can read proficiently by third grade. If you can read proficiently by third grade, studies show that you're more likely to graduate high school, have better jobs, reduce criminal activity, and live healthier lives.
That makes me think about the story that Michelle shared with that little girl and how they got her excited about reading again.
We invest a lot in literacy, but in different ways. The other piece that, you know, we didn't talk about with that land purchase was we did a full sub-area plan, which basically meant we took 200 acres and we showed the city what was possible for a subdivision. And so so that ended up going through an entire year-long process. We got it adopted by the city, and now we have a plan. So when developers come into our city, they know exactly what they have to do without jumping through hoops, and know exactly what kind of homes that we need, what we want to build, where the roads will go, where the walking trails will go, where the water retention all goes. And we're hopeful that in 20 years from now, we have almost 900 more homes sitting on the land that once was owned by a nonprofit.
When you said yes to this opportunity, did you know you were going to get your hands in all these different things?
I didn't know I'd become quite the housing expert.
There's a blessing in there, right? Yeah, we find those. We love to look for those. Well, obviously, children and their welfare is of primary importance to you and the foundation. After our short commercial break, Nate's going to take a deeper dive and share more about those three key areas that they're focusing on for children and their families. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm talking in our last segment today with Nathan Peters, CFO of the Greater Watertown Health Foundation. So, Nate, you said that you focus on three main priorities for kids and families: affordable access to childcare, affordable housing, and youth mental health. So let's do a little deeper dive into those three areas. Let's start with quality childcare. Why is access to it so important for a child's development?
Sure. Early childhood education is crucial for brain development. We know that 90% of brain development happens from 0 to 5. So pretty darn important if you want somebody to read proficiently at third grade, that they hit their milestones from 0 to 5 to get there. So structuring quality childcare, super important in that thing. We also know that that leads to better school performance, which ultimately, as you go down the line, higher earnings and reduced antisocial behavior, all linked to childcare that's programmed out in a really meaningful way.
So kind of look at what you're looking for at the end and kind of
start at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Go upstream. Figure out before they have problems.
Yeah.
What are the things that we can do to make sure that they lead a successful, healthy life?
Absolutely.
Child care is crucial in that.
Yeah. Well, what about affordable housing? Well, what's the impact on child development and academic performance?
Safe, stable housing reduces stress for children. It also helps them then they can focus on their education. Safe, affordable housing also, you know, frees up a parent to invest more time in their children. You know, and this is one of these areas that we've really rolled up our sleeves on for housing and trying to work on housing as the system. You know, we can talk about that here in just a little bit, kind of with the subdivision that we're currently underway with that has rents, market rate apartments, as well as single family homes and duplexes, all in the same thing, anchored right to the south of the YMCA that's getting built.
Okay, and so we talked about the importance of quality child care, about affordable housing. Let's move on to mental health. I think we all know that mental health is a big issue right now, especially for kids. How is the foundation addressing this?
So this is huge. Part of what we invested in when we bought the campus, there was a building on the campus that we converted into what's called a youth crisis mental health facility. So that's crisis, right? That's not going upstream and stopping a problem before it is. That's stopping a bad thing from happening when a child that's, call it 10 to 17, boys or girls, are having harmful thoughts or suicidal thoughts. So we created what's called the Mott Center on our campus. And we did that in partnership with Jefferson County Human Services and Wisconsin Community Services. And they staff that 24/7. And it's only one of two in the entire state of Wisconsin that exists. So we got that up and running about a year ago, and it's been a really, really successful thing. In addition to that, going upstream, there's a couple simple things we can do. But yeah, there were some eye-opening things when we get into mental health in children that come up. Like, 3 hours a day on social media doubles the risk of poor mental health, including experiencing symptoms of depression and anxiety.
Three hours a day. Okay.
School loneliness have doubled since 2012. Do you know what came in 2012? The iPhone 5. Mm. World adoption of smartphones happened in 2012. It's a hockey stick of depression and loneliness that happened since then.
And one might think, really? You know, because you look at all the ways kids can plug in, but it's not the right ways. I mean, certainly technology, there's benefit, there's advantages. They can be tools used for good. Mm-hmm. But we all know as parents that if we can take that phone away from our kids, they can engage, use their brain, use their minds for things that, you know, get outside for crying out loud. You know, go outside and use your brain, lay in the grass, look at the clouds, you know, whatever it is, something. Right.
Yeah. This is another scary one. Listen to this one, Joe. 22% of high school students have seriously considered suicide in the last year, and 10% have tried. So some of these things, and it just continues to go on and on. Like, kids have smartphones in schools, and one of the things that we think shouldn't happen is we should have phone-free schools. That's something we think should happen. But on average, a kid who has a smartphone gets 237 notifications a day. 23% of those happen during the school day. That's every 6 minutes our kids are getting pinged and taking their focus off of school. And so kids who don't have smartphones in schools, they write down 62% more information, so they listen more, and they score a full grade and a half higher in their studies.
Wow.
So this solution we're trying to get to here that I think actually has a lot of momentum behind it, phone-free schools, and let's limit social media until a child is developmentally ready.
Mm. And, you know, that could be different for different children. You know, different people I don't know if there's stats behind that, but...
Australia just had a really cool article. They actually just banned it until 16 years of age. And that's kind of what we're finding in the study. The brain is not developed and ready for this until they're about 16.
Mm. Wouldn't that be something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, check them in at the beginning of the day and get them late, you know, when you leave. But the amount of times that they are pinged during the day, that's incredible, you know, and their focus is taken off. Wow. Well, we know that data tells an undeniable story. How do you know whether what the foundation is doing is actually improving lives or falling short of your goals? You know, how do you know that what you're doing is actually working?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so our program staff uses this method called result-based accountability, and they use these things called turn-the-curve plans. So each one of our programs that we have, and we have about 20-some programs that we support, each one of them has this turn-the-curve plan where they define the outcome, where we are, who aren't being served, and what are we going to do about it. And so, you know, depending on what you want to talk about, we could probably go into a few of them. Housing, for example, we don't want to see people spend more than 30% of their income on housing, and so we track the federal data to that. But, you know, that's kind of one of those that doesn't tell the right story when you just sit there and stare at it, mainly because 70% of our region, they own their house, and in the last 5 years, rates have been pretty low, and so these people locked into it, and then a lot of people who own it, you know, their housing costs didn't go up, but their incomes maybe didn't. So this tells this wrong story that makes it look like, oh, housing's getting better and more affordable. Well, it's not. Mm. You know, it's getting worse. And that's one of the reasons that we rolled up our sleeves in impact investments. And we made an investment in a subdivision called the Rock River Ridge, which is just south of the collective. And we needed a continuum of housing because that is the true system. So you need a place for somebody to rent when they're in that state of their life. And then you need a couple of options of home ownership so they can start building maybe a wealth generation tool. Because there's different ages that we, and stages that we get to in our life where we have different needs.
Well, and I, you know, we talk about having organizations share their proof of performance, or again, you know, to tell us how they know what's working. And basically then you're saying you use results-based accountability, and there's all kinds of things behind that, and we don't have the time to dive into that, but I'm sure if anybody wants to call Nate, they can just get the 411 on that, I imagine. Or go to the website.
I get you the right person.
That's right. That's right. Well, you are the CFO after all. So, yeah. Well, tell us what's next for the foundation in the coming years on the impact investment front.
Yeah. So, in the past 12 months, we have created, alongside Jefferson County and Thrive Economic Development, a housing fund. The Live Local Fund is what we called it. Now, what we found is gap financing is needed to get developers into rural America. The rents or the price points don't pencil out. So what you need is a creative financial tool that gets them to the table. Well, we created one. We have a couple of really bold investors behind us. I would call out Exonia Bank, Fort Healthcare, Fort Community Foundation. Combined with Jefferson County, we've raised almost $10 million so far.
Wow. Okay.
Which is great.
That's awesome.
It'll go to put $25,000 per unit into, call it an apartment or a house, as gap financing. This is financing that they just pay either a low interest rate or it accrues, and it has a strategy to get refinanced out, you know, in the years that come, that kind of really matches what the natural progression of kind of how commercial banking goes, what finances these types of things. That $10 million, we think that will create up to 500 new housing units in Jefferson County. And we're getting some of the top developers in the state coming to Jefferson County, where they can't get as much rent as they could in Dane County, Waukesha County, Milwaukee County, because we have this creative tool that's now been made available. So we're starting to deploy that cash here in probably the next 90 days, and we're super excited that this thing's going to create probably $125 million in new development just by making a $10 million fund.
Wow. Well, I would say that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Coming up in the future here. So how then can organizations or individuals partner with the foundation to help you with these goals that you have?
You know, we're really looking for people who have bold goals, want to innovate. We know housing needs to be innovated. You know, we haven't even touched on for sale housing, which has increased what used to be a price to earnings ratio at 2-1 back in the 60s when you adjust for inflation. It's now up to 5-1. We are looking at strategies from separating the cost of the land to the house. So we're looking for people who, you know, that want to understand more about community land trusts, shared equity investments, gap financing, all of these pieces to invest alongside of us. We also welcome funders nationally to invest through us. Mackenzie Scott invested through us. She gave us $5 million a couple of years ago.
Nice.
Another day I'll tell you that story because it's kind of wild. But all you got to do, go to the website. All of our contact information is right there. Find us on Google. I spend a ton of money on SEO for Google Ads. So like you make type in Watertown or Greater Watertown or any of that, you're going to come up with us because we've made sure that that happens for clicks. and you're going to find all of our contact information as well as email information for us.
All right. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you, Nathan Peters, CFO from the Greater Watertown Health Foundation. Thank you for being here today. And again, Michelle Altman, founder and executive director of Cornerstone of Grace. I thank you both for sharing your stories of impact and how you're serving your community in your own unique ways. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to Cornerstone of Grace or the Greater Watertown Community Foundation. And if you know of a great organization that's doing great work in our community, like our guest today, that you think would be a great guest for the show, you can email me at jill@ellenbecker.com. I encourage you to tune in every Sunday morning at 10 to Milwaukee's philanthropic community to learn more about the ways people and organizations are making an impact through the work that they do in our community. You can tune in to News Talk 1130 on your radio, your computer, or your cell phone. You can also visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to previously aired shows, and you can also listen on demand at Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or Apple Podcast. Give some thought to how you can make a difference in some way for someone in our community. Maybe our guests today have shared something that aligns with your interests or your passion to give back, or maybe some of the other nonprofits featured over the last number of years have inspired you with their stories of impact. Whatever it is that has inspired you, I encourage you to follow through and determine how you can personally, or perhaps collectively with your family and friends, how do you want to make a difference and have a significant impact, either in our local community, nationally, or globally? Donating, volunteering, or simply advocating for an organization. Those are all great things that you can do, and there are wonderful ways to be a blessing and give a blessing. Thank you for listening today, and have a great day.